Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
Thank you for joining us for our Sunday night sermon time at Graymere. It's been a strange year in many ways, but one of the things we're experiencing now is we're seeing the effects of dramatic weather. We've seen wildfires, we've seen the effects of hurricanes and storms, and it reminds us of what extreme weather can do and how it can change things up dramatically in a community. Years ago, when Hurricane Hugo came through North Carolina, it devastated a lot of areas, and one of those was a small town where a couple named Reb and Jackie were preparing to open their first restaurant. They had done all of the preliminary things that needed to be done. They had gotten everything set up. They had all the equipment. Everything was moved in. They were awaiting their final inspection. And once the inspector came in and gave them the final okay, then they could be open to do business. So everything was ready until the hurricane came through. So like any other business owner, as soon as things settled down, they drove over to their shop and they saw that their building was intact. In fact, everything in their building was still functioning. The storm hadn't affected it at all. They found out later on that their small restaurant, a fire station, and the service station were the only places in town that still had electricity. Now, because of everything that was happening, there would be no permit that was given to them. When they called the office, the inspector said, "Well, there's no way we can grant a permit right now to let you sell things. We're backed up trying to take care of everything else." So even though they couldn't run a business, they did see a need to use all of the things they had in their refrigerator as a way to help others. So they had some bacon and some tomatoes and lettuce and some bread, and they decided to start giving away some BLTs and coffee. They heard that another restaurant in a nearby town was charging $10 for eggs, because people needed a place to eat. They needed something to eat, so they decided to put up signs that everyone was welcome. Free BLTs, free coffee. And so the workers and the nearby places started coming in. People whose homes had been destroyed and just were looking for a warm meal started coming in. Before long, everyone knew that was the place to go if you wanted some free food. And slowly but surely, something started to happen. Because Reb and Jackie were working to prepare these BLTs and to prepare this coffee, people started pitching in. They started wiping down tables. They started sweeping up messes and doing the dishes. In fact, other people in neighboring towns started getting things out of their refrigerator and bringing it to Reb and Jackie's restaurant that was titled Our Place. They'd go to Our Place, they'd put their stuff in the fridge, and the first BLTs and cups of coffee ended up resulting in what they estimate to be about 16,000 meals. And when it was all said and done, there were more items of food in the fridge after they started serving than before they started serving. People kept donating things. People kept stocking their fridge so they could continue to feed others. It's an incredible example of how just a few people willing to serve could channel the energy and an outpouring of love and concern from everyone. And it was a monumental task to feed thousands of people. You know, of all the miracles that Jesus performs in the gospel, there's one that shows up in all four of the gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And it's a miracle in which Jesus feeds thousands of people. But Jesus doesn't do it with an army of other families that have food in their fridges at home. He doesn't do it using something that already seemed like a great start to putting a feast together. He does it in a way that shows God's power in a specific way that I think must have been significant for it to be included in all four of the Gospels. And it makes Jesus' ability to feed so many people just incredible. A friend of ours, when we lived in Mount Juliet years ago, owned and ran a restaurant. And I can remember conversations with him about how hard he worked to make that restaurant as efficient as possible. And if you walked into that restaurant with him, you were served very efficiently. But he talked about all the numbers and all the things that they had memorized of how quickly you could get people in and out. And he told me just how hard it was, how much focus it took just to feed the amount of people that would come in his restaurant once a day throughout the whole day. And as we think about that effort, it's really unbelievable to see how Jesus is able to take care of thousands of people. And he's doing it in a midst of time where there's a lot of confused thinking about who the Messiah was, about who this Son of God, Son of Man was supposed to be. There were some, as we find out later, among some rabbinic teachings, who expected the Messiah to come in and to reproduce the miracles of Moses. And one of those was the manna in the wilderness, the food that God gave his people in the wilderness. They kind of expected this Messiah to be able to perform that again. And so you wonder, when Jesus is able to feed thousands, if that's playing in people's minds. We also find out in John's account of this miracle that after Jesus feeds the 5,000, there are some who want to make Jesus king by force. Now, there were several who had come claiming to be the Messiah that was promised in the Old Testament in the Hebrew Bible. And of these, historians tell us, they were almost all militaristic. In other words, they were ready to get up an army to overthrow the Roman government. And maybe that's what some people were expecting of Jesus. We've seen he can heal the sick. We know he can feed us when we don't have any food. This sounds like the kind of guy who can overthrow the Romans. But that's not the purpose of this miracle. It's not what Jesus wants them to see. And so we could look at any of the gospel accounts. We're going to be looking at Mark in Mark chapter 6. And we're going to start reading in verse 33. But it might be helpful, as you have this open in your Bible, just to flip over and see what the other gospels have to say as they give an account of this miracle as well. We'll start reading in verse 33. The people saw them going, and many recognized them, and ran there together on foot from all the cities and got there ahead of them. When Jesus went ashore, he saw a large crowd, and he felt compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. When it was already quite late, his disciples came to him and said, "This place is desolate, and it is already quite late. Send them away so that they may go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered them, "You give them something to eat." And they said to him, "Shall we go and spend 200 denarii on bread and give them something to eat?" And he said to them, "How many loaves do you have? Go look." And when they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. And he commanded them all to sit down by groups on the green grass. They sat down in groups of hundreds and of fifties. And he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up toward heaven, he blessed the food and broke the loaves, and he kept giving them to the disciples to set before them. And he divided up the 2 fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied, and they picked up the 12 full baskets of the broken pieces and also of the fish. There were 5,000 men who ate the loaves. We've been thinking about what it means to look at Jesus through different perspectives. We've thought about what it means to look at Jesus through the perspective of someone like Nicodemus, or to look through Jesus from the perspective of a parent that's wanting healing for his or her child. But we're going to think for a few minutes about what it was like to look at Jesus through the eyes of the 5,000. Now, when I use the term 5,000 here, I'm referring to 5,000 men. There were likely much more than this, as when the whole number is considered. You'd have many more people there if you included women and children. But you have thousands of people that are watching Jesus. What did they see? I think the text tells us they see a couple of things. Number one, they see a shepherd's compassion, because Jesus has a different response to all of these people than the apostles did. Now, it might be hard for us to imagine this, especially right now, because we're not in a lot of places where huge crowds gather. But Jesus was the kind of teacher that, because of the miracles he was performing, he didn't have a lot of peace at this time in his ministry. There was always someone. There were always groups of people that wanted to hear from him, that wanted to talk to him, that wanted something from him. And so what they find out is, even when they try to get away to a secluded place by themselves in verse 32, the people saw where they were going and they beat them there. They beat them to their destination. So when they arrive, it would be very easy to just kind of groan when you see all the people that are already there. They're already waiting on him. It's like a celebrity trying to get away from the paparazzi. And everywhere you look, there's someone there who wants something. And that's kind of the way the apostles respond. Jesus sees them like sheep without a shepherd. The apostles see them as people that need to go home. And so they tell Jesus, well, send them away somewhere. Just tell them to go find a place to sleep, to go fend for themselves. They need to get some food. This is too much for us to deal with. And it's not the only time we see this happen in the lives of the apostles. They'll do this when there's a blind person who's talking too loudly that wants to talk to Jesus. They'll kind of shush him and try to keep him away. Or when the children want to come to Jesus and they try to send them away. The apostles are pretty good at deciding who does or doesn't have the right to spend time with Jesus. But that's not Jesus' approach. I think I look at people and I look at situations the way the apostles do all too often. I look at a situation and I see a problem instead of an opportunity to minister. I look at someone and see what that person wants from me instead of what I can give to that person. And so they looked at all these people and they thought, we don't have time for this. We don't have the emotional energy for this. We don't have the bandwidth to deal with this. Just tell them to go away. But Jesus looks at him and sees something very different. He sees them as sheep without a shepherd. And that's scriptural language, and that's also Old Testament language. It's not just in the New Testament we see this idea of shepherding, although that's certainly present. Jesus describes himself as the good shepherd. But think about the way the prophets would describe God's people. Zechariah chapter 10 and verse 2, we read that people wander like sheep. They are afflicted because there is no shepherd. When God's people don't have any guidance, they're like weak sheep that are afflicted. Or in Ezekiel 34, verse 5, they were scattered for lack of a shepherd, and they became food for every beast of the field and were scattered. In this chapter, Ezekiel talks a lot about the shepherds of Israel, the people that should have been serving as shepherds that weren't. And he's very quick to tell them that you have people that should be taking care of you, should be spiritually shepherding you, but they aren't. And when you don't have a shepherd, then you're open season for anything that might want to attack you. A few months ago, our family was watching a couple of episodes of a show called The Spy in the Wild. It's one of those nature documentary shows where they get some close-up footage of animals in the wild. But one of the ways they do this is they take kind of a robot version of that animal with cameras in it, and they operate that robot version of that animal in cameras so you can see what they're saying. So if they're looking at meerkats, you'll have a little robot meerkat that looks up. Or if they're looking at alligators, there's a little robot alligator head. And we watched one of these sort of unfolding stories as there was a pack of Arctic wolves that were moving through a very difficult, rugged terrain, and they were trying to get to a different place, but they had all of these pups, these young wolves that they were trying to take with them. And there's a point where one of the adults and one of the pups gets separated. And so you can see, as you sort of watch this, the way the adult digs out a little spot to put the pup, to keep the pup warm and somewhat protected from the elements, while he goes out to get some food and bring it back. And as the adult kind of trots off, you can hear the whimpering of that little pup in the middle of this difficult region. And you almost want to say to the TV, stop whimpering. Stop letting people know where you are. You know, hide in that place. Because we know if there's an animal in the open, that they're fair game. That seems to be the way Jesus saw these people. They were hurting so much, they didn't have a shepherd. And it would have been easy for them to suffer. How do I see people? Do I see them the way the apostles did? Do I see what they want from me, what they need from me, what problems might exist? Or do I look at them the way Jesus did? And he saw what they needed and what they were desperate for. So they saw a shepherd's compassion. And then in the miracle itself, they see the shepherd's provision. Jesus asks them what they already had, even though what they had was not anything that could have fed such a large group. When we compare the different gospel accounts, we find out that these loaves and fish came from a boy who had some lunch with him. It would have been more like a snack. We don't need to think of too large fish. We need to think more like sardines or condiments. I mean, that's the kind of size we're dealing with here. And the loaves wouldn't have been very large, huge loaves of bread either. We're thinking just some pieces, some morsels of bread. And so as we look at the gospel accounts, we're finding out that it would take, as it says here in verse 37, shall we go and spend 200 denarii on bread to give them something to eat? And a denarii is a day's wage. In other words, am I going to spend 7 to 8 months' wages to buy food for everybody here? But what Jesus asks is, what do you have? How much do you have? So you get them something to eat. Well, how are we going to do that? What do you have? And they go, they get what they have, and they give it to him. We see echoes here of something that happens with Elisha in 2 Kings chapter 4. When there is a man that comes and he has brought to Elisha some fruits and loaves of barley and some ears of grain. And he says, give them to the people that they may eat. And the attendant said, what? Will I set this before 100 men? And then he said, give it to them that they may eat. Thus says the Lord, they shall eat and have some left over. And sure enough, when the attendant gave that food, which didn't look like it would be enough for 100 men, to them, they ate and they had some left over. That's exactly what Jesus does here. He takes what's been given to him, and he provides enough that they have some, and they have some left over. Now, nothing about this makes sense when it comes to simple arithmetic. There's no formula of how many times you could divide up a little sardine-sized fish that would feed that many people, and that would have baskets of leftovers. So we know that Jesus is performing a miracle here. There are miraculous things at work. This isn't just like Reb and Jackie opening their restaurant and a lot of people pitching in. This is the Son of God at work. But there's something else that's powerful here as well, which is, even if I don't have something that looks all that impressive, when God takes it and uses it, there can be things that happen as a result that I never could have imagined. A young boy's lunch doesn't seem like it's going to do that much good. But if you put it in the hands of Jesus, he can use it and multiply it in a way that can affect people in a manner that I would never have expected. In fact, if we just kept up our own expectations of this text, if we just thought about what we might assume would happen, we probably wouldn't have written this ending. And I wonder sometimes what it is that keeps us from putting into the hands of the Lord the talents and the abilities that we have. Maybe we look at what we have and what we can do, and it looks just like a few loaves and a few fish, and it's unimpressive. And we think, you know, I don't have much of an ability in this area. I can't do this very well. When I do this, it never seems to go well. And so I've got all of these challenges. What could that possibly accomplish? And I think this text reminds us that if we put it in the hands of Jesus, it can accomplish a great deal. There's a great deal that could happen. But it's not going to take place until I do what Jesus told them to do, which is to say, what do you have? Go find out what you have. Maybe this week is a good time for you to think through some of the talents that you have for serving God. What do I have? What has God given me that I can do to serve others? It's amazing to see how people use the gifts and abilities God's given them to help others. I get to see that all the time on just in my perspective as a minister here. I got to see that close up over the last couple of weeks as our family had some quarantine time. And we benefited from people who were constantly encouraging us, helping us, dropping things off at the porch, finding out ways that they could help. And it's amazing to me, the reminder that even the smallest of things in a time where you're really hurting have a powerful impact. So before you think, well, what I have to offer isn't much, or I can't do much for someone else to help, let me just encourage you that even the smallest thing, if you're using it for the Lord, can make a huge impact in the lives of others. What can we do to serve others today? When they looked through the eyes of this crowd, they saw a shepherd's compassion who loved people. They saw a shepherd's provision who could give people what was needed. There were a lot of competing ideas about what the Messiah should be and how the Son of God was supposed to act on earth. Jesus managed to confound a lot of those conceptions. But he will today look at us with compassion. He will give us what we need. And so if you need to make him the shepherd in your life, to follow his guidance, to put Christ on in baptism, we'd love to talk with you about that. We're not in the building together, but that doesn't mean the invitation is somehow limited. It's always open. We'd love to talk with you more about becoming a Christian. It may be that there are other issues you have in your life that you'd like us to pray about. Please connect with us at the church building. Call us at the office. If you're a member at Graymere and there's a concern you have, please let one of our shepherds know. We want to reach out and show you the compassion and the provision of the Lord during this time. Let's remember what it means to take what we've been given, to take what we have, and to put it in the hands of the Lord this week. Who knows how he might use it as we serve him.